Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds.
Recently, I asked Mint Mobile's legal team if big wireless companies are allowed to raise prices due to inflation. They said yes. And then when I asked if raising prices technically violates those onerous two-year contracts, they said, what the f*** are you talking about, you insane Hollywood ass f-. So to recap, we're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month.
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Burrow's furniture is built for the way you live. From ensuring easy assembly and disassembly to honoring highly requested new colors for their award-winning seating, they always have their customers in mind. Their modular seating is made out of durable materials to last and grow with you. And with Burrow, you always get fast, free shipping. Get up to 60% off during Burrow's Memorial Day sale at burrow.com/ACAST. That's burrow.com/ACAST. burrow.com/ACAST.
Hi, and welcome once again to History Dweebs. I am Tim. Welcome to the podcast where we take a lighthearted look at the dark side of history. The topic of our podcast today is the murder of Eddie Gaedel. Eddie was a little person. Is that the appropriate
term? I believe he was a dwarf, Timmy.
He was a dwarf. Midget. Not a midget. No, that's politically incorrect, Colonel.
No, midgets don't mind being called midgets.
I think they do. I think it's a thing. But is anyway.
Have you taken a survey? Huh? What the fuck do you know?
I mean, do you know?
I got a strange thing.
You're not here.
Yeah, you're not here yet.
You're not here.
All right. Yeah, let me do the introductions, and then you can...
Yammer.
Well, I wasn't going to say that, but okay. This is a story of Eddie Gaedel. Eddie was the only little person to appear in a Major League Baseball game. And this isn't really about that. So if you're not a baseball fan, still stick with this story because it's an interesting story. It's more about his life. And Eddie... met an untimely demise, Colonel. He was murdered. So we're going to talk about...
Well, you just gave away the whole story.
I know. We're going to talk about Eddie's life and
this topic.
His sad
That's what ending. I want to know.
Oh, it's kind of a cool topic. You'll like it. I doubt it. Had you read it, you would probably know
that. Had you read the script, you'd know it.
I just
got
the script 10 minutes ago.
I know. I was doing some late editing. But anyway, let me introduce our panel. But before I do, let me remind you that we are a comedy podcast and we use adult language. So if that is not your thing, then we suggest you...
Just move along. Nothing to see here.
Yeah, probably want to check out some other great podcasts that are out there, like Insight, which is really good. Our friends Charlie and Allie, or there's probably some other ones out there to check out. But if you're offended by adult language, this one is probably not for you. Okay, let me introduce our panel. We got a new introduction for our first host.
I call bullshit.
She is now and henceforth shall be known as the benevolent, Her Majesty Queen Brandy the First. How are you today, Brandy?
I'm all right, Timmy. How are you?
Fine. Are you sure you prefer that over penis loving?
I do.
Pill popping?
I do.
Satan's dirty little secret?
I do prefer that.
All right.
It seems more fitting.
So henceforth, you will be known as Brandy the First.
That is fine.
Long live the Queen.
Long live the Queen.
How are things going with you?
All right. I had a little bit of a rough weekend, so I want to thank everybody that that was on our page that sent very kind words to me. I was feeling needy, and you guys helped me out, so I really do appreciate that. But you know,
things better.
Who knows? But you know, one day at a time.
Yeah.
We're plugging along.
Glad you came in to podcast today.
That is the only reason I am here.
Well, it's an important reason.
It is. It is the reason.
When I feel bad, I like to podcast. I think it's therapeutic.
You're being a little bit of a fucking...
You've been kind of a...
Dick.
Been a little crank cantankerous to me.
Cantankerous is one word. I also want to say that Molly Erickson... Mm-hmm. Made me some glasses chains, and I got them.
I've seen that. You look like
very nice.
Crazy librarian.
They are spectacular.
They are spectacular. Yeah.
They are spectacular.
We have to take a picture of them and put them
she
up on
the
page.
She does beautiful, amazing work. I have a glasses chain for every day when I'm feeling kind of funky. Mm-hmm. And then I have one for, you know, dress.
Oh, you got a dressy
glass
chain.
Oh, I got a dress one.
Oh, okay.
I do. I have a dress one. And then my niece actually got me one, so that's kind of a sporty
cool.
one. So
you should take a picture and post them.
Sometime I will. Okay. I'm not about pictures right now. I look like I have meth sores because my face is so broken out.
What's your face? Yeah, I don't see your face broken out.
It's awful.
You look fine.
But Molly does beautiful work, and she's thinking about setting up an Etsy page, which I am completely...
Etsy.
Yeah.
Etsy? I think that's a food page. Etsy?
It's not. But she's thinking of setting up a page, and I think we all should encourage her because she does beautiful work.
Yeah, those chains are amazing.
Yeah, she does really, really good work. So I appreciate what she did. Came at the perfect time. So thank you, Molly, very much.
You know, Molly's problem with jewelry is she takes pictures of herself wearing the jewelry, and she's so pretty that it overshadows the jewelry. I told her, get a model that's not, get an ugly model.
Get Nicholas to do that.
Get Nick. Put that necklace on Nick.
Seems harsh.
No, I'm not saying Nick's...
Nicholas a handsome man.
Nick's a handsome man, but you're not the kind of handsome that would overshadow her
jewelry. You know, but Nick...
Nick's a great guy.
Nick is, and but, you know, him wearing a choker, I don't think
he
is
would
a big
do it,
sell...
Though.
He would do
I
it.
I know he would do
he
it.
He would do it, but I don't think it's a selling point for the choker.
That's true.
I also want to give a shout out to one of our longtime listeners, Annette Petre. Annette, of course, she is amazing in her own right. She makes soaps and body butter and what else?
Oh, gosh. She makes
amazing stuff.
It really does. It smells good.
And
it's wonderful.
Her company is called Obsessively Calm, and they have a website, obsessivelycalm.com. And we have all, tried her products.
Stuff. Oh, mm-hmm. I've got some.
And it's amazing. So if you get a chance, go to obsessivelycalm.com.
Calm. C-A-L-M.
Yes. Yes. And check it out because she's got some amazing stuff. Brandy,
yeah.
Before we move on to the Colonel, do you have our Patreon shout-outs you want to get to?
I might. Let's see here. All right. So we're going to go through here. Daniel and Kimberly Bassett, Jen Moyer and David Hill, Tommy Lane, Jason Dykes, Shelly Garrett, Bridget Clavey, Brandy McBride, Maggie Glover, Karen Widner, Callie Jones, Joseph Kerr, Lauren Meredith, Jessica Greeno, Mike Brown, Sarah Bloom, Amber Krupp, Joe Hopkins. Good Lord.
Joe with the
Now American
History podcast.
Yes. Mm-hmm. Well, you know what? Now I got to put my glasses on. See, and they're handy.
Right, because your chain. You can use your chain.
Because I can use my chain, but it's all tangled up in my thing here. Let's see.
Tangled up in your thing. Okay.
Shut up.
She got a headphone cable tangled up in her glasses.
It is. It's all a mess. Whatever. Okay. So we're going to all right.
Last time I got my thing tangled up in a thing, I got a blood clot.
Becky Omelet.
You get an embolism that
an
way.
Embolism?
Yeah,
an embolism.
Yeah. Sounds creepy. Karen Alden, Cheryl Pierce, Timothy Young, Caitlin Campbell, Fiona Crisp, Laura O'Reilly, Christine Bourgeois, Donna Curran, Maja, Aaron with an A, Kimberly Cameron, Elise, Kathleen Edrickton, Diane Student with the History Goes Bump, Amber Trevino, Annette, Lise, Leslie Hagar, Amber Scoville, Jahara, Alicia and Chip, let's see, Jeff and Don Chestnut, Andrew Happ, Karen Barnes, Rachel Flynn, Holly Woodward, Shirley Strapp, Todd Long, Lydia Fisher.
Yeah, and her sister.
And her sister.
Ruth.
Okay, well. Jennifer Wasnick, Tyrone, Phyllis Munson, Sarah Morgan, Melissa Montoya, Brittany, Irvin Martin, Jennifer Siemens, Cindy Liu, Heather.
And Linda Middleton. Mm-hmm. With Jennifer.
Middleton, yes.
And Jennifer's son, Hunter.
Yes. Cindy Liu. Heather Poole. Charlie and Allie from the Insight podcast. Bridget Bernhard. The lovely folks at They Walk Among Us. Stacy, Christine Hauer, Cheryl Weldon, and then Rudy the Wonder Dog. We cannot leave out, if I was going too fast, I do want to make sure that I give a shout out to Catherine Cock Garage Richardson, Nene, and Kelly Charlotte.
Yes, thank you all very, thank you, Brandy. Thank you all very much for supporting us on Patreon. If you would like to support us on Patreon, just go to patreon.com/historydweebs, where you can give a little, you can give a lot, or...
Just a wee tiny bit, Timmy.
Just a tiny bit. Are but even gonna... even if you can't give anything, it's okay. It's cool. Just keep listening. That's all we ask. Okay, Brandy, yes. Can I introduce our third member now?
If you must.
All right. We are proud to introduce the most dangerous man in podcasting today, a man who is known as the moral compass of our podcast.
Nothing. Nope.
A man who has been called an oasis in a desert of despair.
Not ever.
The Reverend, the Colonel, Charles Beauregard Hawk Waters III, affectionately known as Southern Gentleman. How are you today, Colonel?
I'm doing wonderful today, Timmy. Thank you for asking.
He sounds like he's bringing something up when he says Hawk.
Well, I can't help Hawk. It. It's Hawk. His name. And I, that's
it's
another,
not his name.
It's a name he gave himself.
Yes.
It was given to me.
By
as
you.
As a gift.
By you. And by the way, I gave you the name Colonel, so all these people are getting upset that we're taking your colonelship away.
Look here. No. Look here, Timmy.
You was not a colonel until I made you colonel.
You proclaimed yourself emperor. I think that's where this made a left.
Yeah. Yes, it did. But anyway, Colonel, how are you today?
I'm doing wonderful. Did you throw Reverend in there, Timmy?
Yes.
Okay. Yeah. I just want to make sure you got that.
Are you excited about CrimeCon?
I am excited about CrimeCon. There's going to be a lot of people there that we're looking for, a lot of listeners that we're going to meet and looking forward to meeting them.
Yes.
And other podcasters. A lot of podcasters have gotten in touch with me.
No, they haven't.
You know, Allie and Charlie, they was talking about, you know, maybe me giving them some insight. As to
they were not talking about
how
yeah,
we do things.
Yeah, they want to know how they can get the kind of numbers that we get. Yeah.
Which
you know what? You
one of them would have to hit their head really hard.
Here's how you do it, Charlie and Allie. You bring an idiot on your show.
It offends half the listeners.
And give him some made-up title.
Hold on. You're going to blame this whole goddamn train wreck on me? No. Like this is all my fault?
No. Only about 70% is your fault.
That seems fair.
No, I think.
In fairness, I think that's
okay,
a little low.
Okay, maybe 70%.
I think it's a little
70%,
low.
70%, yeah.
I'm telling you.
Says Queen Brandy the First.
You're goddamn yeah. right.
How
hey,
did you, how
none
she
of,
get a
but
title?
Let me tell you something. None of you gave me that name. I got that name from wait, our listeners.
Wait, I gave you that name.
I don't know. Did
yes,
you?
Yes, I proclaimed you Queen Brandy the
all
First.
All right.
When I had to get rid of this
well, you
got
to get rid of the dipshit over there.
Yeah. Well, our listeners, look, first of all, our
there
listeners are not.
There was a political crisis. Yeah.
There
was a political struggle between me and the colonel. And as a compromise, we elected you.
I stayed out of the fray. I want that
yes.
noted.
Yeah. You did. Yeah. And then you was wise.
I was wise, as usual.
One was on the left, one was on the right, and you went right down the middle.
You know, I also want to say that I really feel like we're going to disappoint most of the people that we meet. Because at 9:30, I'm ready to wrap it up. Like, maybe if we hit a Starbucks, I can make till 11. But, you know...
I don't think I'm going to disappoint anyone because people have low expectations of me. But you two, yeah, I think you're going to disappoint some
people. I feel like they're
going
to figure out that we're jackasses.
Well, see, and I guess that's
Dude,
the difference because
as soon
I,
as he starts talking about Rudy, I'm off to my room.
I have no fear of disappointing people. I have
well,
been disappointing people all my life.
That's
so.
What Renee says. Yeah.
You're just as funny in person as you are on the show.
But I do want to give a thanks, a special thanks to one of our Patreon sponsors who I don't know well, but she was very nice. Shelly Garrett, she sent me a link and said, you know, you might be interested in this. And it was a TED Talks thing or something. It was not a TED Talks. It was a guy who had pancreatic cancer, and he did this thing called The Last Lecture, and it was
it's
very very good.
It's wonderful.
Yeah, it's very
yeah,
good.
So
yeah.
Thank you, Shelley, for sending
touching.
Me that. Yeah,
very touching.
Is that because everybody around you dies?
I think because it was very deep and intellectual, and I seem like a deep intellectual sort
of
guy. Maybe
it's because everybody around
for
him
those
dies.
Of you who haven't seen it. It's he was a professor and he was diagnosed, I guess, stage 4 cancer.
Pancreatic cancer.
Yeah, and he gave a lecture of kind of life lessons, and it is really good. It's been out there a while, but it's really good. Okay, so we're looking forward to meeting everyone at CrimeCon. I'm sure you'll be entertained with the Colonel's stories of Rudy and being incarcerated and being locked up and all his interesting tales. So we're looking forward to meeting everyone.
I have been detained on a couple of occasions. To me, it's not like I'm Al Capone, Christ's sake.
I'm just saying that you tell some interesting stories.
And, no, he doesn't.
Well, you know, when we had that lunch with Dr. Jeff and Don, his lovely wife, Don, they're very nice people, but...
No, you know what? We found out Don's not all that nice because Jeff's got the man flu and she put him on a diet while he's got the man flu.
Well, it's the best time.
I would just say about they're very nice, but the point is... Brandy and I didn't have to talk much.
We did. We talked very little. We talked very little.
Yeah. So that's always nice.
Because I got in a flat tire, so I was a little grouchy.
Yeah, that was. But we had Chuck there.
We had Chuck.
So we're depending on him. And I'm like going to hang out by Chuck. So, you know.
Well, I don't have to
say
I'm probably not going to do that, but, you know.
Well, Jeff and Don are very conversational. They're
wonderful people.
They are wonderful people.
Okay, so let's talk. First, before I get into the story, there is a podcast I want to give a shout-out to that apparently, Chuck, you've been listening to, and I just started. I'm behind because I was on vacation, but it's called Bloody Murder.
Bloody Murder, Tara.
And yeah, it Tara. Is Tara, and it's her husband named Barney. Is that her husband?
Tara and Barney. I don't think they're married. I think they're just friends.
It's a hilarious podcast. They do true crime, but with humor, and it's so funny. So please check out Bloody Murder.
If you like History Dweebs, it's very much along the same lines.
Yeah. If you like our show, you'll love theirs because it's not only is it similar, but it's better, wouldn't you say?
I would say the girl, Tara, is much nicer than the girl we got.
Wow.
I mean, I'm just saying that. And she got an Australian accent.
I can't do that, yeah.
Yeah.
Okay, so let's get on. Let's talk about Eddie.
I mean, Barney is no colonel, for the Lord love of God, but, I mean, the girl's good.
But it's a really funny show. So
it is very funny. Bloody Murder.
Yeah, definitely. If you haven't subscribed to it, subscribe, check it out. I think you'll enjoy it. Okay, so let's talk about Eddie Gaedel. Few men, Brandy, have made an initial splash in the world of baseball as Eddie Gaedel did in August of 1951. The year of the Colonel's birth.
I was born about 20 years after that.
Not 20. Come on.
15 years. 16, 15, some odd
All
years.
All right. Anyway, August 1951, picture it, Brandy.
Sicily, 51. Yeah. Okay, I'm there.
So Eddie Gaedel was a...
little Beaver Cleaver.
He was a little man. He was 3'7" tall, and he was hired... by Bill Veeck, who was the owner of the then St. Louis Browns, a team that doesn't exist anymore, to be a pinch hitter.
That's a smart move.
Yeah, mm-hmm. Bill Veeck was, we'll talk about some of his antics. He was a baseball owner, but he was a showman, and he was like, he was sort of like the P.T. Barnum of baseball.
I was going to say, he was a P.T. Barnum of baseball, yeah.
Yeah. So he hired Eddie Gaedel as a... as a promotion, as a gag. He was always doing stuff like that to bring in fans because the team that he owned, the St. Louis Browns, they didn't draw a lot of fans. They were not a very good team, and they were in the same city as the St. Louis Cardinals, who were very popular. So he had to come up with ways to attract fans. So one of the ideas he had was to hire.
Was it a major league team?
Yeah, major league team. So. He decides back in 1951 to hire this guy named Eddie Gaedel, this little person, to pinch hit. And it became kind of a farce, and it's a very popular story in sports history. But we're going to kind of look at the story behind the story, as we do here. It's so in-depth.
Sure.
We're kind of a 2020 of
We're like podcasts. 2020, but completely different.
Yeah.
We're like the National Geographic.
Like the National Enquirer.
Yeah. People magazine.
Okay. So anyway, Eddie would end up, as I mentioned earlier, coming to a very sad end. His life would come to a sad end, and we'll get into that as he was murdered. But let's talk.
There's the story.
Let's talk about, first of all, a little bit about Bill Veeck, who was the owner who decided to hire Eddie and make him a Major League Baseball player for one day. Bill Veeck was the P.T. Barnum of Major League Baseball, like we said.
Nuh-uh.
In fact, his wife, Eleanor, I never been attracted to women named Eleanor.
But Ellie.
Ellie's nice. Ellie Mae Clampett.
You know that's
now,
short
Eleanor,
for Eleanor
Roosevelt was kind of hot.
Yeah, in a very unattractive way. Eleanor Raymond was her name. She had actually was an elephant wrangler and horseback rider with the Ringling Brothers and Barnum & Bailey Circus. So when we say that he was the P.T. Barnum of Major League Baseball, his wife was actually an employee of P.T. Barnum's, which is interesting.
Is it?
Yeah, well, kind of. So Bill Veeck was a master showman and promoter. During his career, he owned several minor league and major league baseball teams, including the minor league team, then Milwaukee Brewers. They're a major league team now, but back then we were a minor league team. This is in the 40s, 1940s. He owned the Cleveland Indians, of course, Karen Barnes' favorite team. He owned the St. Louis Browns, where this promotion with Eddie Goodell took place. And he owned later the Chicago White Sox. While being the owner and team president of the Cleveland Indians, Bill Veeck signed the second African American player in the major leagues. As you all know, Jackie Robinson broke the color barrier in 1947, and 3 months later in the National League, well, in the major leagues, and then 3 months later, Bill Veeck signed Larry Doby as an outfielder, and he broke the color barrier in the American League. So good for him.
No, it wasn't really good for him because he didn't get all the notoriety.
He
didn't.
He was a second.
But he got all the abuse that Jackie Robinson got.
Yeah. Do you know where Branch Rickey, of course, is the one who signed Jackie Robinson and broke the color barrier? He was the general manager.
Color. You're saying color, right?
Okay. And he did it for the Brooklyn Dodgers. Do you know where Branch Rickey was from?
Pittsburgh.
Cincinnati.
Portsmouth, Ohio. My hometown.
Your hometown?
Yes.
So how did Jackie Robinson understand him when he was talking to him?
I don't know. Most of the teams owned by Bill Veeck struggled on the field and at the gate. For example, the St. Louis Browns that he owned shared the Sportsman Park with the more successful St. Louis Cardinals. Actually, the St. Louis Browns owned the ballpark, but the Cardinals were more popular, and they would lead the league in attendance and wins. So, you know, they were playing second fiddle to the Cardinals. In 50 years of their existence, the Browns had only 4 winning seasons. They appeared in the World Series only one time, and that was in 1944. And it's believed the only reason why they made it to the World Series that year is because most of the players, the good players in the major leagues, were off to the war, right?
Yeah.
And the St. Louis
Ted Williams was out fighting the war.
A lot of major league players, and so it weakened the other teams. Of course, that's when you had teams scraping the bottom of the barrel. And here in Cincinnati, we had Joe Nuxhall became the youngest player.
15 years old.
Youngest player ever to appear. So a lot of the good players were serving in Europe or in Japan or in Asia. And the Browns, a lot of their players, season players, were 4F because...
So they was physically unfit to go to the Army, but they could play baseball.
Or mentally unfit for the military, yes.
Today you would be a 4F. You wouldn't have to worry about
the
draft.
So 1944 is the only time that the Browns made it to the World Series, and they made it to the World Series against their... arch nemesis, the St. Louis Cardinals, and of course, they lost, right? The Cardinals were more popular, they were better, and that's the only time that a World Series was played in one single ballpark in 1944. After that, 1 year, the Browns, you know, really went downhill, and they started struggling at the gate and in the standings. They became... the only thing notable that happened to the Browns after that, between 1944 and 1951 is they signed a one-arm player.
Yes.
Outfielder.
They're like the Lefty. Cleveland Browns.
Yeah.
His name was Pete Gray. He played the outfield, and he's the only one-arm major league position player. There was a pitcher. Jim Abbott. Yeah, Jim Abbott. You're right.
I remember him.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Who pitched, but the only position player, Pete Gray, played for the Browns. Anyway.
Jim Abbott hit a home run one time, Timmy.
Yeah.
One-handed player.
Yeah, he was actually a very good player. In 1951, Bill Veeck, who had owned the Indians, decided to sell the Indians, and he bought the Browns from owner Bill DeWitt. And Bill DeWitt has been active. That DeWitt family has been active in baseball for many years. I believe they were part owner of the Reds at one point. It may still be. I don't know.
They were back in the...
At least in the 60s.
Yeah, in the 60s. But I don't believe they were after the Marge era.
So in St. Louis, now that he bought the Browns, he knew he had to do things to attract fans, because the Cardinals were a much more popular team, and they drew people, you know, followed them because they were a winning team. So he had come up with some really crazy promotions and wild antics would lead to Bill Veeck being loved by many and loathed by others, sort of like me. He had baseball players participate in sack races. You ever been in a sack race, Brandy? And that's not a race to jump in bed.
Yeah, I understand.
She won a few of those.
I understand. Well, if I'm sleeping, you're goddamn right I did.
But sack races where you're racing in a brown burlap sack or whatever.
Right.
Then they'd have three-legged races. They had cow milking contests.
Oh, good old cow milking contests.
Yeah. All these things were, done to attract players. They had one promotion where they put 100 pairs of shoes in the middle of the baseball diamond, and only two were mates, and the players would run out and race out and try to find the mates, and the first player who got them would win $50. So, now, of course, this was before the multi-million-dollar contracts. Yeah. Players wouldn't even, walk across the diamond for $50. But back then, it was, they were supplementing their income with these crazy antics. He was the... Bill Veeck was the first baseball owner to implement promotional giveaways. Like, we have that now.
Bobblehead
night. He came up with free bat night, free ball night, free pickles.
Nice.
Free lobsters, free hot dogs and ice cream. He gave away plates, television sets. He had free tuxedo night. He gave away pigs, mice. Eels, pigeons, ducks.
Hold on. He gave away eels?
Yes.
How in the hell did he give away eels? Did he put them in a little tank? Did you just get an eel when you walked in?
I don't know.
First 30 people in the door.
I
wouldn't even want a pigeon. He gave away pigeons and ducks.
Well, I can see getting a pigeon would be fun.
You'll like this one. Probably his most famous was they one time gave away 50,000 nuts and bolts to a one lucky contestant.
Yes.
You can't have too many nuts and bolts.
I guess not.
I got in my garage a whole drawer of nuts and bolts. And I'm always going through there just looking for a nut.
Well, you would.
That figures.
Anybody seen my nuts? Come down here. Look at my nuts.
Well, you wouldn't have loved that giveaway had you been present at the time. Among his other promotions, Colonel, was kazoo night.
Yes. Every parent's
favorite. Oh, my God, that sounds awful.
Every parent's favorite night.
Which each person was given a kazoo and was encouraged to play along with the Star Spangled Banner and take me out to the ball game.
That seems a little disrespectful to me.
Yeah,
Timmy.
I don't think it would go over well now. There was ladies' nights. He was the first one to come up with ladies' nights. Teachers' night. Cabbie night. It would be, I guess, Uber night now. Bartender night. And they even have, Shirley Strap would like this, squirrel night, where you can bring your pet squirrel to the ballpark.
This is a true story. Tanner,
of course it is.
Shirley would like this. The other day, Tanner is walking down through a neighborhood in Chicago.
Mm-hmm.
Squirrel comes right up to him. Right. I mean, he's got it on film. I'll show it to you to prove it. Squirrel comes right up to him and climbs up his leg.
Ugh.
Climbed up his leg. And the neighbor, the person that lived in the house right there said, oh, that's, it's kind of the neighborhood pet squirrel. It likes people. It's used to being fed by the neighbors, and they give it peanuts or whatever.
Those things get rabies?
Yes.
Occasionally they can, but they don't usually. So the dangerous thing.
So now all of a sudden he's a squirrel fucking expert.
I'm going to tell you this. This is what I know about possums and squirrels, and because Rudy just killed a possum the other night. Possums and squirrels do not live long after they're bit by something that's infected with rabies. Now, raccoons, on the other hand, and bats can live a long time with rabies. That's why they're more dangerous than the other animals. Because a possum gets bit by a rabid animal, it's going to be dead in a day or two. But a raccoon, it can wander around for 6 weeks or so with the rabies.
Okay.
So just so our listeners, the more you know,
thank you, Wild Kingdom. Jesus Christ.
What, you didn't know that?
Merlin, I don't care.
Well, you're worried about every possum you see and having rabies or whatnot. Squirrels, I just having that rabies. They do.
So on a squirrel night, you could bring your squirrel, and you know, I'm sure not too many people have pet squirrels, except maybe Shirley. But they also released 50 squirrels on the field in between doubleheaders.
Yes. I bet that went well.
And players would chase them with butterfly nets, and for each squirrel the players bagged, they would receive $50. So,
did they ever have hooker night?
No, that's a thought.
I would have hooker night. The first 200 hookers are free.
So, but in 1951, so he's coming up with all these promotions, but they're still having problems getting people to the ballpark. But, you know, he's an innovative guy, and he was like this throughout his career. But in early 1951, he came up with one of his most crazy ideas, and that was he was going to sign a dwarf to a baseball contract.
Sure.
Now, being that the dwarf would be very short.
As dwarfs tend to be.
Yeah.
Right.
They
huge
would
midgets.
Yeah. They would have a very limited strike zone, which means he could put the little person having pinch hit, and it would be very difficult for a pitcher to throw a strike. So he come up with this brainstorm. But, of course, you know, the if you know anything about baseball, the commissioner's office and the league president's office tends to be very conservative.
They're very stodgy people, yeah, in there, Timmy.
So he had to come up with a way how to get this by the by the league without bringing attention to it. So, but first he had to find the perfect little person. Okay, so that's when we get to Eddie Goodell. Eddie Carl Goodell was born on June the 8th, 1925, in Chicago. He was the second of three children born to his parents, Carl and Helen Goodell. Eddie's father, Carl, was born in Lithuania and immigrated to the United States in 1902, settling in Chicago. Helen Goodell, his mother, was from New York, and both her parents were Polish. The Goodells were married in 1919. They had three kids. Carl supported his family by selling shoes at a department store. So he was like kind of like the guy.
He was Al Bundy.
He was Geppetto.
Yeah.
Not Geppetto. Geppetto made shoes and little boys. Al Bundy sold shoes.
So around the time Eddie turned 3 years old, his parents noticed that his growth was stunted.
Oh, geez.
They didn't know if it was a thyroid problem or some other abnormality.
Was he smoking cigarettes?
I don't know. He grew.
Is that a stunt your growth?
He grew to the height of. So was masturbation, right?
I don't know. Does it?
Are you playing basketball?
Yeah. You're kind of a little guy.
I'm not a little guy.
You're not. You know. You're not slam dunking anything.
I'm not dunking.
You're not playing for the Cabs over there, Colonel.
No, but I'm having fun, Timmy.
You are closer to the ground than you really should be.
Anyway, he grew. Eddie grew to a maximum height of 43 inches, which is 3 feet 7 inches. And he weighed approximately 65 pounds. His parents and his siblings were all of normal stature. As a consequence of his height, Eddie was continually picked on and taunted as a child.
You know, kids are some mean motherfuckers there.
Yeah. The incidents often escalated in fistfights and other maltreatment. Despite the taunting and abuse, Eddie persevered and graduated from high school. Yay. Go, Eddie.
And I'll tell you what, you don't want to take on a dwarf because those people, just because they're little, don't underestimate them.
See, I think there's a difference between midgets and dwarfs. I think dwarfs are not proportioned. And I think little people are proportioned. Look that up on your phone.
I'm going to look that up.
Okay.
Difference so, between anyway, midget and dwarf.
See how I got him to stop talking, Brandy?
Yeah.
Okay. So anyway, Eddie had a little chip on his shoulder growing up, let's say.
Probably just a tiny chip.
Yeah, but, you know, he was bullied, right? So he was a little insecure and combative about his height. He would often get in fights at local bars. He liked to drink, too. He started drinking at a pretty young age. And he would get in fights when people would call him Half Pint. Apparently, he did not
like... He did not like Half Pint.
No. So once he was in a bar, and men in his neighborhood, and men were making fun of him at the bar. And Eddie got pissed off. So he jumps on top of the pool table and starts to swing a cue stick at these three guys. Making fun of him.
You got a midget on a pool, table.
Yeah. Well, you know, pool table. Like that, you know.
See,
if you jump on a pool table,
it's a great equalizer.
It really is. Especially if you're yielding a cue stick.
I've seen some shit in my day. I ain't never seen a crazed midget on a pool table swinging a pool cue.
So Annie takes his cue stick and he hits this guy over the head with it, in the face with it. And it requiring several stitches. But when he hit, there's these three guys that are tormenting him. He hits one of them, and that guy's out, right? And he's bleeding. But Eddie's sitting there with half a cue stick because he broke it on this guy's face. But that didn't deter Eddie. He picked up cue balls and started throwing them at the other man.
You don't want to get hit with those balls either.
No, they're very hard. So these guys ran from the bar, and of course, you know, all the other patrons were laughing at the sight of all this. So Eddie was not someone to be fucked with.
That's what I mean.
Yeah.
Anybody who's been picked on their whole life, it's sometime they're going to have these little explosions.
Really?
And you don't want to be.
Really? Yeah. Can't wait to see that when that happens.
Did you get picked on someone you was young?
Because
you
he tend is to blow on a up. Roll today.
I know,
if the next podcast I bring a cue stick. All right, let's go back to Eddie. I like him. He also did not like to travel. He was not a traveler, Brandy. Okay. He was feeling at ease. It almost sounded like he could travel in luggage. It almost sounded like he had like autism.
Walk a mile in his shoes.
Or something where he needed like routine.
Yeah.
I don't know. OCD?
He wasn't diagnosed or anything, but it sounded like he needed his familiar routine. Because later on, he gets offers to even be in movies and stuff. He turns them down because he has to travel. But anyway, he was able to find employment in a variety of fields because of his unique stature. He was an errand boy at a local newspaper.
Timmy, just to interrupt you, there is no difference between a midget and a dwarf. It's just midgets considered a derogatory slur.
Okay. But isn't dwarfism something about, isn't there something related?
It has something to do with proportion.
Yeah, yeah.
Dwarfs are proportionately proportioned everywhere.
Okay. Like they would, okay, so would a dwarf have a regular size penis?
No, they'd have a small penis. They would have a regular size penis, Timmy.
Scrotum?
Not sure about scrotum.
All right. We like to be precise.
Haven't you ever seen midget porn?
Yeah, I think maybe. But I really didn't really.
Since 2013, Bombas has donated over 100 million socks, underwear, and T-shirts to those facing homelessness. If we counted those on air, this ad would last over 1,157 days. But if we counted the time it takes to make a donation possible, it would take just a few clicks. Because every time you make a purchase, Bombas donates an item to someone who needs it.
Go to bombas.com/ACAST and use code ACAST for 20% off your first purchase. That's bombas.com/ACAST, code ACAST.
If you thought the only way to get a more defined jawline with natural-looking results was through surgery, think again. Juvederm Volux XC is a non-surgical injectable gel filler that improves moderate to severe loss of jawline definition and can help you achieve natural-looking results with little downtime. Even better, this improved definition lasts up to 1 year with optimal treatment. No maintenance required. Improve jawline definition for a smooth, sculpted look with Juvederm Volux XC. For important safety information and to find a licensed specialist, visit Juvederm.com. That's Juvederm.com. Not for people with severe allergic reactions, allergies to lidocaine, or the proteins used in Juvederm. Common side effects include injection site redness, swelling, pain, tenderness, firmness, lumps, bumps, bruising, discoloration, or itching. There's a risk of unintentional injection into a blood vessel, which can cause vision abnormalities, blindness, stroke, temporary scabs, or scarring. Talk to a licensed specialist to find out if it's right for you.
Pay attention to this size.
That's the whole point of midget porn.
What, the different sizes?
To see what's going on.
I've just seen Bridget the Midget. It's the only one I've ever seen.
You know what I always wonder about her? Where does it go? I mean, is the thing poking her in the lungs? What's it doing?
I don't know. She seems happy.
She does seem happy. She wears those little black combat boots.
Yeah. whatever gets you there. Anyway, so Eddie found different types of jobs. He worked at a local newspaper. He performed in circuses, rodeos, and other entertainment venues. During the Second World War, Brandy, he worked as a riveter, crawling into plane engines and wings. Another locations where bigger people could not fit.
Like Rosie the Riveter?
Yeah, except he was Eddie the Riveter, I guess.
Well, it doesn't have the same ring.
No. He was also a professional performer, and he belonged to the American Guild of Variety Artists, AGVA. I'm not sure if that's still around anymore. But anyway, so he's doing, he's trying to take advantage of his... Before he became a baseball player, he was the pitch man for Mercury Records. He was known as the Mercury Man, Colonel.
The Mercury Man.
Yeah. So anyway, he had this really spiffy hat that he wore, and he was kind of known in the area around Chicago for promoting Mercury Records. So anyway, let's get to his venture into baseball. So Bill Veeck, owning the Browns, he's looking for this. He has this idea to put a midget in a major league game. He's looking for the right one. He sends out some of his promotional people to find him. They have a hard time finding someone who fits Bill Veeck's vision of a baseball player, midget baseball player. But in the end, they find Eddie Goodell. So... the team in 1951, the Browns, were in dead last in attendance and in the standings. So he chose the 50-year history of the American League, and they had a birthday party at the ballpark. They brung out this big cake, and guess who popped out of the cake, Brandy?
Eddie.
Eddie Goodell. He did.
Cool. Seems like a disappointment.
Yes. So no, that was his
that
first.
That wouldn't be a disappointment. I would love to have a midget jump out of my birthday cake.
So that was his first appearance at the ballpark, but
didn't
he was
jump
just
out of a cupcake.
Remember when women used to jump out of cakes? They would have these things, and women.
Why don't they do? Why is that not a thing anymore?
I don't know.
Why is that not?
Because fucking cake's expensive.
But they weren't even real cakes. They were just cardboard paper things, and you could get somebody hot expensive to jump out, and then I think they came and serviced you or did whatever.
I don't think so.
Nah, I think they just...
Timmy.
What?
She crunched your pretzels.
She's a queen.
Are you kidding me? Are you kidding me? The girl's eating pretzels in the middle of a show?
Oh, yeah.
Dude, Every time I criticize one of you guys, I catch hell. I'm not saying a word. People want to listen to her eat pretzels.
Can you hear me?
Knock yourself out. No, I can't. Okay. I didn't know. I didn't know.
I heard the crunching in my headphones. It sent a chill down my spine. It was like nails on a chalkboard.
It was not as bad as his kazoo.
Well, no.
All right. So anyway, back to Eddie. So Bill Veeck has a publicity man named Bob Fischel to find the right candidate. They find Eddie, who's 26 years old at the time, living in Chicago, pitch man for Mercury Records. Okay, so he comes in. He jumps out of this cake for the 50th anniversary of the American League. But that is just the start of his career in baseball. Bill Veeck then decides, as we said, he's going to use Eddie Goodell as a pinch hitter. Now, the American League president at the time was a guy named Will Hartridge, and he was a no-nonsense type of guy, and he would never agree to let a midget play in Major League Baseball. A little person, sorry.
Seems discriminatory.
Because it would, he would, you know, he really was good. Really big on the integrity of the game. So he
what
was
if
not,
they were good.
Yeah, he was not, he would not go for it. So what they did, they had to get a contract approved by the American League front office. So they smuggled Eddie into the Chase Hotel in St. Louis. They put him under blankets and smuggled him into the hotel where they, because they want to keep this under wraps.
Under wraps, under the blanket.
Under the blanket. So they signed him to a contract, and they sent the contract to the American League on a Friday afternoon.
Oh, yeah.
So,
and nobody reading that.
No one's reading it. They rubber stamp it. And so
it's pretty much like here after Wednesday afternoon, nobody paying attention.
Yeah.
Nobody does yet.
So they approve the contract without really knowing that Eddie is only, you know, 3 feet, 7 inches. So they then have to get a uniform for Eddie. So Bill DeWitt Jr., remember I said that he used to own the Browns? Mm-hmm. He had a 9-year-old son. And they used him to help. They used one of his uniforms to put on Eddie. And the number on the back of the jersey was 6, but they changed it to 1/8.
That makes sense.
Seems wrong.
Yeah. Now, when the scorecards and things came out before the game started, it looked like it was number 18, so no one really noticed it. Mm-hmm. But it was really 1/8. So Brandy is going to tell us about the famous at-bat, and then we'll get into the murder that happens a little bit later on in his life.
So they in a pre-game strategy session, Veeck ordered Goodell to squat low at the plate without swinging so he could draw a walk. Duh. Goodell crouched, wielding a toy bat and displaying a strike zone described as 1.5 inches in height.
That's pretty small.
That is a little bitty strike zone.
That's smaller
How
than
big
a baseball.
Is ball?
Yeah. That's smaller than a baseball.
You know what the pitcher should have done?
Hit him.
Just drilled him right
in the
head.
Little Tim music.
Yeah, just popped him right in his little tiny head. Well, he had a regular-sized head.
By game time, Goodell, a showman himself, was revved up for the performance. He was swinging the bat and getting in his role. Veeck and crew became worried that the unlikely ball player would set aside the plans and try and hit.
Do not swing.
Yeah. That's what they used to tell me when I would get up to the plate. Just stand there. Hope somebody hits you with a pitch.
They'll walk you.
Maybe they'll walk you. Do whatever. Just stand there.
Once a similar stint was tried in a minor league game, and the midget actually hit the ball, and it took almost 1.5 minutes for the player to reach first base. Why didn't they throw the little fucker out? What were they doing?
I think they did from, like, left field.
Well, yeah.
But that wasn't the purpose. He wanted him to walk, so he was like, do not swing, Bill Veeck.
Well, to ensure that Goodell would not try to swing at the pitch, Veeck half-jokingly told Eddie that he had a sniper stationed in the bleachers.
See, you know,
and would shoot Eddie if he tried to swing at a pitch.
That's actually what when I played in high school, that's what my coach told me, that he would actually shoot me from the dugout if I swung. If we had this rule, because I was not a very good hitter back then, Timmy. Mm-hmm.
back then. And, he's gotten much better with age.
Yeah. I had to have two strikes on me.
Late.
I had to take two. I had to wait until I had two strikes till I could swing at a pitch.
Uh-huh.
It was just take until they got two strikes. Right. I hope they walked you.
I had a guy. There was this guy who eventually signed him professionally, and then he got hurt. But he was so much better than everyone else. The coach actually had a home run signal that he would give to him when he wanted him to hit a home run.
Yeah.
Wow. Okay. Are we all ready?
Yeah, I'm sorry. We had a little baseball chatter there. I apologize.
It was
sorry to get
chatter.
Off topic.
Yeah, but so so he tells Goodell, he's got a sniper up in the upper deck, and he's going to shoot him if he swings at the pitch. Deck.
In the famous picture of his at bat, Goodell actually stands somewhat erect, expanding. I know, expanding his strike zone.
Well, if he's erect, it's going to expand.
This probably concerned Vec and the others involved who may have feared for his safety. I don't think they feared for his fucking safety.
I think it expanded to something like 3 inches. He got to the plate. He got to the plate, and all of a sudden he thought he was Joe DiMaggio. Yeah. So he started standing like Joe DiMaggio. He was getting the character.
Let's see. Goodell was given a contract for $15,400, which came out to $100 for the day. Minimum scale wage for a midget act. What?
Yeah, he got $100 out of the bottom line. He got a $15,000 contract, but they avoided.
They were only going to keep him for a day.
Yeah, they were only. It was only for a day.
The minimum scale wage for a midget act.
Yeah, midgets ain't cheap. Midgets ain't.
Evidently, they are.
Midgets be testifying.
Oh, they will. Goodell waived the normal 30-day clause that guaranteed severance after he was released. Vec also took out $1 million life insurance policy on Goodell in case something went awry.
Oh, that would be bad.
Since it was valid.
Nothing worse than having a dead midget. It's a PR nightmare.
Well, since it was only valid for one day. Since it was only valid for one day, the insurance policy only cost Vec $1.50.
Oh, that's not bad.
No.
Well, you know.
Call Geico. I wonder if they got a midget discount.
I don't know.
You've got that little...
a little person discount.
No, they got that little gecko.
Yeah.
Got him a flow. Flow got him a deal.
All right. He should have just... So, like Tim said, just to recap what Tim said here in this, since it was the weekend, Goodell's contract wouldn't be reviewed by the American League office before Monday at the earliest. So the league office rubber-stamped the contract without reviewing it. Between games of a doubleheader on Sunday, Sunday, August 19th.
your mind automatically went there, didn't it?
I know. Let's see. Sunday, August 19th, 1951, Vec had a 7-foot birthday cake wheeled onto the field. Goodell popped out to the joy of the crowd. Detroit Tigers pitcher Bob Kane took the mound in the bottom of the first inning and warmed up. Browns manager Zach Taylor then signaled for a pinch hitter. Goodell in for outfielder Frank Saucier.
You ever been pinch hit for by a midget, Colonel?
I wonder what that does for your ego. As Goodell strode to the plate. Picture that. Yeah.
I guess it's better than losing a girlfriend.
Yeah. Or getting chased out of a bar by a midget.
Yeah. Well, as Goodell strode to the plate, umpire Ed Hurley turned around and yelled, "What the hell?" Taylor presented Goodell's contract to the umpire, and after some confusion and all-around amusement, Hurley called for the pitch. Because of his crouch, Eddie Goodell's strike zone was now, like we said before, about an inch and a half. Pitcher Bob Kane could not stop laughing and had to call timeout between pitches to pull himself together. Kane's catcher, Bob Swift, walked to the mound and told Kane to keep the pitches low. Well, good job.
Well, you almost have
That's the mark of a good catcher. Jesus.
You know, there's something, and I don't know what it is, and I don't mean to be insensitive. I don't mean to be whatever.
Oh, good. I always like what comes after this.
When he's insensitive, people love him.
Every time I see a midget, I laugh. Every time I see a midget, I laugh. And one day we was out here, this is back when I smoked, and we were standing out front, and I seen a midget walk in, and I had to laugh. But then I walked up to the front of the building and walked in the door. And as I walked in, two more midgets was approaching me on the sidewalk. And I was thinking, Jesus Christ, did Barnum and Bailey just lay off a bunch of people, or what did they do here?
You got three midgets. You got a party.
I mean, yeah, you got something going on when you got three midgets.
Wow.
Wherever three midgets are gathered, there's a circus. I mean, I was just
wow.
wondering what was going to happen there. But I had to turn around and walk away because there's something inherently wrong with me that midgets make me laugh. They just make me laugh.
No, there's something
snakes make me all shaky and scared, but midgets make me laugh.
I think most people enjoy a good midget.
So Goodell was a right-hander. He walked on four pitches and hammed it up as he jogged down to the first down to first base. Jim Delsing was sent in to pinch run.
They didn't let the little guy run for himself?
Well, it would have taken all day. Goodell ran off the field to a standing ovation from the 18,000 fans in attendance. The whole affair was nearly botched when all the commotion, the team forgot to alert the photographers that something special would be happening in the second game. When Goodell came to the plate, only one cameraman from the St. Louis Post-Dispatch was present. Vec had tipped off the paper's reporter, Bob Brogue. That explains why there are so few pictures of the event.
I think it's just that one picture.
The aftermath shook baseball. Well, Jesus, if that's all it takes to shook baseball.
Baseball's a stodgy sport.
Yeah,
they love their traditions. Yeah,
very conservative.
Well, you got Babe Ruth, who can't keep his dick out of anything. He's 350 pounds.
Ty Cobb used to kill people.
Yeah, they asked Eddie after his at bat, you know, how he got a standing ovation, and they asked him how he felt, and he says, "I feel like Babe Ruth."
There you go. While many found the incident...
R-O-O-T.
Yes.
It's like Babe Ruth's dick was there.
Huh.
Now pinching Babe Ruth's cock.
That's fucking awesome. So, God. Now, God
There's a
it.
Story here, I believe
Babe
me.
Ruth,
we're getting
Babe,
there.
Babe Ruth was a... very famous baseball
player. Who the
player.
Fuck are you talking to?
You, I just, I'm just so you know.
I'm the one who brought up Babe Ruth, you dumb son of a bitch. Jesus
why
Christ.
Why are you like that, devil? I'm just trying to help you out with
Do
baseball.
Do not fucking mansplain ball to me. I cannot.
She actually played college ball.
Yeah, that's true.
I can actually. Lesbian. Here's the thing. I actually hit. Which means I can beat the fuck out of you with a ball bat in about three swings.
You actually got into a game.
Yeah, well, I did that too. All right, so.
It's not the only thing she got into.
Did they use the face guards when you were playing?
No. No, we had to suck it up. If you took one to the nose, you took one to the nose.
It's a thing now. I know.
Oh, I know. Yeah. Let's see. While many found the incident amusing, about as many were offended. American League President Will Harridge voided Goodell's contract 2 days later, citing the best interest of baseball. To milk the publicity, Bill Vec became indignant and claimed in the press that the Yankee all-star shortstop and fan favorite Phil Rizzuto was nothing more than a tall midget. Rizzuto was 5'6".
Well, that's some bullshit right there.
It is. Eddie Goodell played along, claiming to be the wronged party. He blasted Harridge for ruining his chance at a baseball career. Eddie even bemoaned the fact that baseball didn't have a commissioner to appeal to, as Happy Chandler had recently left office.
Yeah, so they only had the American League president, and he was having no part of it. I'm sorry.
No.
I had something to add. I was just going to say, they actually struck his at-bat from the record book to pretend it never happened, but a year later they reinstated it. So he's officially in the record book.
The following spring, seven midgets from Hollywood showed up at the Browns camp and asked for a tryout.
Man, you could lead the league in walks if you're...
Yeah.
Well, the
club's... Really not a bad idea.
The club's new manager, Rogers Hornsby, evidently had a stick up his ass and wouldn't allow them to suit up. Eddie Goodell capitalized.
They probably didn't have uniforms for him.
Capitalized on his instant fame. I'm sure there was a little league team running around there that would help him out. Eddie Goodell capitalized on his instant fame. He appeared on radio and television shows and made personal appearances. Within a few weeks, he had raked in a substantial $17,000.
That was a lot of money back
then.
That
was a lot of.
Yes.
1950.
A lot of lettuce.
51.
Over the years, he appeared at ballparks during promotional stunts. On September 6, 1951, a few weeks after his initial at-bat, Goodell again strode to the plate for a fee during an amateur game in Sycamore, Illinois. He took two quick called strikes. Somebody called strikes on him. Took two quick called strikes.
That's some bullshit there.
Yeah.
Berating the umpire for both. The pitcher balked and threw another pitch, which Goodell swung at and missed. He left the plate trash-talking the umpire. Throughout the following year,
I wonder if he had one of those squeaky midget voices.
I don't know. He's got a voice
He probably kicked dirt on the umpire's ankle.
He's got a voice like Ving Rhames.
Poor Eddie.
That wasn't a strike.
Let's see. Throughout the following years, Goodell found work because of his fame. He served as the Buster Brown shoe man.
Oh.
Appearing at shoe store openings in Chicago and St. Louis. Was that in that little sailor outfit?
Yeah.
Eddie also landed a gig with the Ringling Brothers Circus and did promotional work for Mercury Records. He could have made a lot more money, but he refused to travel extensively. Hollywood directors wanted him to appear in movies, and Mercury Records wanted him to tour California, but Goodell wouldn't go. Eddie did reappear for Vec a couple more times. On May 26, 1959, Goodell and three other little people landed in a helicopter at Kaminsky Park.
Yeah, this is when Vec owned the White Sox.
They emerged dressed as Martians and carrying ray guns. They ran to the dugout and captured diminutive middle infielder Nellie Fox and Louie
Aparicio.
There you go, Aparicio. And took them to home plate for a ceremony and clearly some anal probing.
No, and the funny thing is Nellie Fox or Eddie Goodell says to Nellie Fox, "Don't take me to your leader. I've already met him," meaning Bill Vec.
Oh, geez. On April 19, 1961, 2 months before his death, Goodell and several other little people worked as box seat vendors at Kaminsky Park.
That's a smart colonel.
Vec hired them after hearing complaints that his usual vendors were too tall and blocking the view of some of the fans.
Oh, so you get the little tiny guy in there.
That's smart. Smart thinking. All right, now let's get to his demise.
Well,
could we get to the meat
of it? It didn't all end happily for Eddie.
That's what I heard. He was murdered.
You ruined the ending.
He gave it away.
That was my money shot.
I do not want your money shot. That's for goddamn sure.
You took my money shot, devil.
I don't think Renee wants his money shot either. Well, I think most of the time his money shot ends up in tissue.
Or on the dog.
Most of the time.
I hope not.
My money shot's just a check.
You put something on it?
Yeah.
Yeah. Post-dated
all right,
check.
To the murder, Colonel.
To the murder. Despite his fame, Eddie struggled with the way some people treated him, mixed with his perceptions of imaginary slights and offenses. 2 weeks after appearing on the diamond for the Browns, he was arrested for disorderly conduct in Cincinnati.
There we go.
Well, we got that in common. Where he was.
See?
Well, that and you're both little people.
Yeah, I am not. I'm 5'10" tall. Why do you keep calling me a little person?
Because you're not 5'10".
I'm every bit of 5'10". Every bit. Almost. I'm 5'10" and
5'10".
Actually.
Whatever.
Where he was performing
your
in
ass.
A rodeo. Eddie had verbally abused some policemen after they mistakenly asked why a little boy was out so late at night.
Yes.
So he got into it with a cop here in Cincinnati.
Yeah.
Eddie Everybody gets into it, the cops here in Cincinnati.
Yeah, but the difference was today he would be shot.
That is the difference.
Eddie was combative, especially after drinking, which became more and more prevalent. He continued to engage in fights and altercations. One relative.
I wonder if you get drunk quicker if you're a midget.
I wonder if you're in the group.
If you're 65 pounds.
If you're in the group and Eddie Goodell starts fighting, do you just pick him up and throw? Do you beat people with him?
That's how dwarf starts.
Do you beat people with him?
Do you like dwarf toss?
Dwarf toss him out the door.
That or just grab him by his ankles and start swinging.
Yeah. Well, he could be a weapon.
I'm telling you.
Well, one relative described him as having beer muscles. It didn't help that he worked as a beer bartender at the local midget club, locally famous midget club.
I didn't know that they had a midget club.
Here?
Me either.
Tell me it's here.
No, it's in Chicago.
Damn it.
South or side
was.
Of Chicago.
I'm sure they don't have midget
That's
clubs.
That's where Bad Bad Leroy Brown's from.
Eddie lived at home with his...
And also, isn't... what's the other guy? Not Bad Bad Leroy Brown, but the other guy. The other bad guy.
Jim.
Yeah.
From the south side of Chicago.
Don't mess around with Jim.
Don't mess around with Jim.
You get spit into the wind.
All of the, well, tug on Superman's cape. But, yeah, see, okay. I just can't.
Do you want to hear about Eddie's murder or not?
Yeah, yeah, let's get to Eddie's demise.
Eddie lived at home with his indigent mother and brother in an apartment in the south side of Chicago.
Eddie sounds like a cocksucker that needed to go anyway.
Yeah. Well, he stuck close to home and said he was said to be very fond of his mama. His health was failing due to high blood pressure and enlarged heart and advanced case of syphilis.
There was no syphilis, but getting back to the point, do you get drunk quicker if you're a midget?
You're only 65 pounds, yeah.
Yes.
All right.
Based on body weight, not
so he really cleaned up.
I mean, but he had an enlarged heart.
It wouldn't take him long to get drunk.
And his liver was probably fucked.
And the drinking didn't help. Now, although most baseball fans are familiar with Eddie's famous at bat, a much less popular subject is the death of Eddie. Nearly 10 years later, after his famous at bat with the St. Louis Browns on June 18, 1961 in Chicago, Eddie's mom found him in bed in his apartment on that date. Eddie had a bruise and cuts near his left eye and bruises and cuts on his knee. And he was deader than a doornail to me.
Oh, poor Eddie.
The coroner's report concluded that Eddie had died of a heart attack. Probably caused by the trauma of somebody whipping his ass and the physical combat involved.
Well, you know, when you are the weapon.
Yeah, they was beating him against. The only fact ascertained by the police in their brief look at the case was that Eddie Goodell had gone to a nearby bowling alley the previous evening where he probably had too much to drink and probably got into an argument. He left alone about 10 o'clock. His apartment was only 5 minutes away. Eddie was known to take a shortcut by walking through an alley close to his home. It appears he was at the alley when he encountered an assailant on his way home to me.
Poor Eddie.
Witnesses later described hearing some shouting, a dog barking, metal cans thrashing about. It was a brutal, brutal fight. The little guy put up quite a fight, but he got beat. So despite these reports, there was no evaluation performed on Eddie's blood contents in this sketchy postmortem. Sketchy. I like that
sketchy
word, Timmy.
Yeah.
Postmortem that followed. His mother found him lying in bed, dead. He had bruises on the knees and on the left side of his face, and inquest said he had a heart attack. Almost everything about his death had been concluded by the Chicago police from Eddie Goodell's reputation as a heavy drinker and all-around asshole.
See, I think a lot of times police don't investigate murders.
Well, and I think on the books this only counted as half a homicide, Jimmy.
Yeah.
Or maybe one-eighth of a homicide.
Maybe. I had a cousin who died, and he fell down some stairs, and I swear I think he was murdered, but I think a lot of times police just write it off, you know, unless there's like family or someone involved that's going to.
I had a cousin get shot in the face sitting on a bar stool.
Well, I mean, that's obviously suicide. Mm-hmm. I mean, obviously homicide there.
Yeah.
But I mean, you know, I think sometimes when it could go either way, it's just easier to close the books, and it sounds like what they did with Eddie.
Yeah, I don't think they ever really looked for who shot my cousin. Since money was missing, the Chicago Police Department concluded that Eddie had been attacked and robbed, but that he was able to make it home before collapsing and dying. He was a brave little trooper.
Oh.
The evidence of missing money is not spelled out as a missing wallet, nor do police reports jump out and say that they even knew how much cash Eddie had on him. Several people at the bowling alley.
Eddie was a baller.
Oh, Eddie was a baller. Shot he was collar. Like you probably carried $14,000 in cash around when you got the time.
Walking down to the bowling alley.
Now, several people at the bowling alley were interviewed and mentioned seeing two strangers drinking and making fun of Eddie. Eddie threatened to hit one with a bowling pin.
Eddie didn't take no shit.
No, he didn't. Now, because of his reputation, the Chicago Police Department declined to investigate the death of Eddie any further. It appears Eddie's reputation of being combative was grounds for letting someone off.
Oh, someone got away with murder.
Now, Eddie died nearly 66 years ago. It'll be next month. It'll be 66 years. It's unlikely his assailant. It's likely his assailant's been dead for a long time, Timmy.
Yeah.
But the point is simple. Someone got away with
murder
in the case of Eddie Goodell because the Chicago Police Department were just not interested in pursuing this case. Eddie was laid to rest on June 20, 1961. Only a few family members attended the funeral.
Uh-huh.
They got one of those little orange crates, put him in it, and dug a tiny little hole for his tiny little ass.
It was like a time capsule.
Yeah. They only had to dig a 3 foot. It was only three feet deep. No. They didn't go to full 6 feet. Bob Kane, who was the player who
was the pitcher.
Who was a pitcher on the mound for that at bat, was the only person from baseball to attend the funeral.
Aww.
Eddie was interred at St. Mary's Catholic Cemetery and Mausoleum in Cook County, Illinois. I know right where that's at.
Yeah.
Of course you do.
Bob Kane, they interviewed him. He said he felt obligated to go. He thought, because he was part of the, you know, he was part of that at bat, and he felt obligated that someone from baseball should attend.
Well, his autograph, Timmy, is due to its scarcity. He was only 36. Due to his scarcity, his autograph now sells for more than Babe Ruth's. Wow. Babe Ruth is a baseball player, double.
So if famous you got baseball a, if you player. Got an Eddie Goodell autograph, yourself. you got something worth something.
Bill Veeck sold the St. Louis Browns after the 1953 season. New owner moved the team to Baltimore, where they are now the Baltimore Orioles. Veeck was not done with baseball, however. He would go on to be the longtime owner of the Chicago White Sox, and he continued to be a master of promotion on the south side of Chicago, where he would introduce an exploding scoreboard and baseball uniforms that included, remember those shorts and long pants?
The players wore shorts in the 70s, yeah.
Which, you know, I never really understood because we played softball for years and we always wore shorts.
Uh-huh.
So.
Yeah, but you get those, you get road rash on your legs.
Not if you wear the sliding shorts underneath them.
They looked dorky for baseball players, though. They really did.
They what?
Sliding shorts didn't come down long
enough. Yeah, they did look crazy. No, they didn't come down long enough.
So
and they didn't have the sliding shorts then.
So your statement was stupid is basically what it comes down to.
You know, just play Candy Crush on your phone and leave the baseball talk to the men, would you please?
Oh, my God.
If you could do it right. Get to Bill Veeck's second most popular promotion.
Well, he hired clowns to entertain the crowds between innings and later became known for hiring very attractive young ball girls who would chase foul balls in skimpy attire.
Mm. Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
Perhaps his second most famous promotion besides signing Eddie Goodell was his 1979 disco demolition at Comiskey Park.
Oh, that was
I remember.
This ill-fated baseball promotion took place on July 12th.
That was something that would happen on our Facebook group page.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. At the climax of this event, a crate filled with two disco records was blown up on the field. Now, the one record that was not in there, Timmy, was the Bee Gees' Saturday Night Live album.
Because it's fucking awesome.
Because it's a classic, yeah.
No. Do you know what New York Times means to man?
I don't know.
I don't know either, but I don't know what it's in that song.
I don't know.
It's
one of those free association lyrics.
Oh, you think so?
Through, yeah.
Maybe. All right, so Disco Demolition Derby was a big event.
So he gets two crates filled up with disco records, blows them up in the field between games. Many of those in attendance came to see the explosion rather than the game. Anyone who brought a disco record was left in the park for 99 cents. You could get in for 99 cents. A local disc jockey then blew up the records in between the games of the doubleheader. More than 50,000 people showed up. The White Sox were only expecting 20,000.
And they started flying these...
The drunken crowd became rowdy, started throwing disco records onto the field like frisbees, and finally thousands rushed onto the field after the detonation. The playing field was damaged by the explosion, and the fans got to the point where the White Sox were required to forfeit the second game of the doubleheader. Veeck remained the owner of the White Sox until his death in 86 at the age of 1971, Timmy. At the age of 71. If you get on YouTube and look up Disco Demolition, it's just
it's
hysterical.
Hilarious. Yeah.
That went out. It escalated quickly.
Yeah. It's one of those, yeah.
All right. So, Brandy, your final thoughts on the life of Eddie Goodell. It was a short life.
He had little man syndrome, for sure.
It was a short life. He was a short man.
Any thoughts or feelings for Eddie?
I have no feelings.
Proportionately,
for
he lived to be like 100 years old, Timmy.
In midget years?
In midget years, yeah.
Colonel, your thoughts on Eddie Goodell?
You know, Eddie was an innovator. And I'm just glad that I'm not the guy. I would have loved to have been in the bar to
thoughts,
see him.
Thoughts, not a thesis. Come on.
You'd love to be in the bar.
I got thoughts. I got thoughts, goddammit.
Okay.
I got thoughts.
Okay, Colonel. What's your thoughts?
I would love. How would you like to have been in that bar and seen him on the pool table, swinging a cue at everybody?
It's a shame it's before cell phones, though.
I know. That shit would have gone viral.
And you know he had a mullet. Let's not kid ourselves.
Yeah,
you know he did.
I got to look up his picture, but I'm picturing the guy from Game of Thrones in my head. The whole time we've been doing this, I've been picturing the guy from Game of Thrones.
He's badass.
Yeah.
Peter Dinklage. Yes. I bet Peter Dinklage don't take any shit either.
Do you think he gets a discount for hookers?
No.
He should. Get half off.
Unless he's getting a midget hooker.
All right, Colonel.
Do midget hookers give a discount?
I don't know. How the fuck would I know?
We have to ask Bridget the Midget.
Yeah.
Colonel.
I'm going to email her.
You have any shout-outs?
You know what, Timmy? My shout-out, we got so many members of the group.
Mm-hmm. This is my History Greaves, the podcast, the Facebook group. History Dweeves, the podcast Facebook group.
It's become so long, I'm trying to reconfigure and trying to figure out what the hell I'm going to do with it. I don't have any shout-outs today because the page was so long. I didn't know who I did the last time. So, okay. Of course, we got Lady Beverly, who we always do, and your wonderful mother, Dottie Scott, who makes all this possible. We do really this show for Dottie because it keeps you out of her hair.
Eddie Goodell looks like the doll Chucky.
Oh, does he?
Yeah.
Yeah, we'll post some pictures up on our Facebook page. Brandy, you have any, where can people find us?
People can find us on Facebook.
Yeah, we have two pages, History Dweebs, and then we have the page where a lot of our listeners interact with us and with each other. It's called History Dweebs, the podcast. It's a Facebook group. Please send a request and join. A lot of fun and merriment goes on there, wouldn't you say, Brandy?
So much merriment.
It's like a Bill Veeck party.
It's a party.
It's a party. There's a lot of dead hookup memes and...
Yeah, not anymore.
Inappropriate stuff.
Very inappropriate memes. You learn a lot about people that scares you. I mean, most of the people...
And we're going to meet a lot of those folks at CrimeCon June the 10th.
The scariest of the scary are going to be right there at CrimeCon,
But we're going to be there on the 10th and 11th, right?
We're going to be there on the 9th, 10th, and 11th.
When are you? Okay, now you're getting there on Friday. Uh-huh. What time Friday are you getting
there? We're leaving here at noon.
This is in Annapolis.
Okay.
Yeah.
You have to close and get Renee and Dominique.
So Brandy,
no, I'm leaving here. I'm not going to be here that day.
Okay. So Brandy, Kevin you and I will be there at what? Midday?
I don't know, 2 or 3, something like midday, that on Friday.
2 o'clock, and then you're going over.
I should be there by 3, 4 o'clock.
Okay, so if you're going to be in Indianapolis for CrimeCon or just going to be in Indianapolis and would like to meet up with us, get in touch with us on Facebook. That's History Reads the Podcast Group, and we would love to meet you. And then you can listen to the Colonel
Jibber
talk.
Jabber.
Yeah.
We're also on Twitter.
Yeah, at History Dweebs 1, you can follow the podcast, or you can follow Brandy at Brandy Vennay. That's Brandy Venna.
Mm-hmm.
Or you can follow the Colonel at Hawk Walters. Is that right?
Hawk Walters, yeah. Yeah.
And you can also find us on iTunes. If you do, please leave us a review. We've got some very nice reviews. Andrew Dighton left us a very nice review. Nick Johnson left us a very nice review. Thank you, guys.
Oh, I do want to add something. Everybody that chipped in, a special shout out, I can't name them all, but everybody that chipped in that sent Anna Girl Lions,
who's
little
a member,
class,
of, our Facebook,
member
right?
of our Facebook page. She was sending this little group of first and second graders to the art museum. She had a little GoFundMe, and all of her money came from donations from the Dweebs.
They're very generous.
It's very, very
nice
of everybody to do that.
Thank you very much.
And I'm giggling, thinking about her chasing those little demons around an art museum.
And we don't have to.
It's worth it. It was worth the donation for her to have to do that.
I hope they honor the ropes.
No.
They will not.
They will not
honor the ropes. First and second graders do not have a concept of the ropes.
They don't honor. They have no honor. There's no dibs.
There's no dibs. Yeah.
They don't respect the sanctity.
Shotgun. There's no shotgun.
Shotgun.
Yeah.
Yeah.
No.
Shields.
Yeah. Save my spot.
No.
Brandy, also Amber is home back from China with her beautiful young daughter.
She is.
Amy. They're doing well, and we're very happy about that. And thank all of you who sent donations in to help the family get able to go over and get
Get her.
And her name is Amy Rose.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, something she's like a beautiful little girl. Jeez. So, thank you all for joining us, and we'll see you next time on History Dweebs.
Bye-bye.
Good day.
Bye, everyone.
Planning for your next trip?
Elevate your travel style with Quince.
Quince has all the jet-setting essentials you'll want for your next getaway, like European linen, premium luggage options, buttery soft Italian leather bags, and so much more. And it's all priced at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe and ethical manufacturing practices. Pack your bags with high-quality essentials you'll be wearing for vacations to come with Quince. Go to quince.com/pack for free shipping and 365-day returns.